Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's new high protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
And a very good evening from Damien O'Mara. You are very welcome to the Wednesday edition of Game On. Busy programme to come between now and 7 o'clock. We are, 25 and a bit hours. The maths isn't good this early evening. Away from the Republic of Ireland's game against Portugal at the Aviva Stadium. Coming up shortly, we will hear from the Irish manager, Stephen Kenny.
I think every single Portugal player, obviously the previous European champions, the Nations League holders, and all of the players have either played in the Champions League final or Europa League final. So we're all with the top clubs in Europe, and that's the nature of the squad, and they have that strength and depth.
So the Irish men's soccer team in action over the coming days. There's a very welcome return to action as well for the Irish senior women's basketball squad. We'll look ahead to their Eurobasket qualifiers. Not necessarily about the ambitions of qualifying for a major tournament, as great as that would be, but perhaps a little bit about the significance of the senior international teams being back playing at that level. In the week that Ireland prepared to welcome New Zealand to the Aviva Stadium, we will speak to the man at the centre of one of the most iconic moments between the sides.
And this big 53,000 crowd await the haka and listen to the response they're giving to it. Well, I haven't seen that before, one challenge being met by another. I remember the sixth All Blacks had a haka which said the New Zealand storm is about to break, but Willie Anderson got a great cheer from the Irish crowd here.
Willie Anderson, his new book is on the way. Well, it's not on the way. It's in the shops. It's a great read. We'll chat to him shortly. And we're also going to hear about what continues to be a fairly tumultuous build-up for the Irish women's squad ahead of their game against USA at the RDS on Friday evening. And I think the fallout from that interview, that press conference by the director of women's rugby, Anthony Eddy, still rolling on.
I think, you know, both programs have had a lot of resources from the RFU thrown at them over the recent years.
So all of that to come between now and 7 o'clock. You can text us, our number 51552. You can tweet the programme as well. You will get us at GameOn2FM.
GameOn2FM.
So we look forward to your company over the course of the next hour. An awful lot to get excited about. An awful lot for us to build up to over the course of the weekend. I know it's one of those cliches that we constantly talk about. Busy sporting weekend ahead, but we've got a busy and a crucial couple of days in store. So a lot to look forward to. We are going to begin the programme this evening with soccer and the Republic of Ireland. Okay, our hopes of qualifying for the World Cup have long been absent, but they play what is a crucial game against Portugal at the Aviva Stadium tomorrow evening. It's live on RT2 television. It's live here as part of an extended programme on 2FM as well. The significance of it, it's the first time that a lot of these players will play in front of a sold-out Aviva Stadium. It's the first time that Stephen Kenny will take charge of a team in front of a sold-out Aviva Stadium. And I think if things are to be seen in recent times and recent games at the Aviva, there is very much a synergy, to use that dreadful commercial marketing term, between the players, the squads and the fans. And I think that groundswell of support has been very, very evident for the manager and the players alike. And Stephen Kenny has been chatting a short time ago with our soccer correspondent, Tony O'Donoghue.
Stephen, this game has been sold out a long time, and to have a full house behind Ireland tomorrow, it's going to be very special.
Yeah, no, it is really special. And you know, I think I've been in charge now 14 months, I think, and in terms of the first game, September 12 months ago, and for 12 of those sort of empty stadiums. So we had 25,000 initially in September and October, and now full house, 52,000. So it's the first of many full houses here, I feel, and it's great anticipation, great support for the team, real excitement, and yeah, we're looking forward to it.
Has that buzz kind of got into the camp? Has that been kind of, you know, understood by the players? Have you been talking to them about it?
Oh, no, I think, nothing needs to be said. You know, I think we know that since the summer, and we're coming up, the crowds have come back, and there's been that, you know, good feeling the last couple of camps. The games have been very good, and performance is good, particularly, obviously, comprehensive wins in the last camp, which has given the players confidence. So Portugal are a world class team. You know, they've all our players played in Champions League finals, previous European champions, Nations League holders. They have immense quality, but we showed in Faro where we're so close to an incredible win, really. And now we have them at home, and it's full house, and you know that's a special occasion.
Which is a more important game to you, though? Because I guess Luxembourg we might be judged more on than Portugal.
Well, I think they're both important, both equally important, and you know, we'll prepare accordingly. The players, obviously, confidence has really improved. You know, I feel the players now have one defeat in the last eight, which is the Portugal defeat. Of course, Ronaldo's two late goals is the only defeat, and out of we couldn't score for a while. As when we were reminded every week, but we've 14 goals and seven now, and that was so you can see the improvement, see the confidence in the players, and that's a good ratio when at this level, and you want to bring that into the game tomorrow and create goal scoring chances if we can.
Do you think you need to finish strongly in order to get a new contract with the FAI?
Listen, I'm not fixated on that. I think, you know, I believe in what we're doing. I believe what we're doing is absolutely the right thing. I think we've got a tremendous group underneath this group coming through again. And, you know, we've got a good combination between experienced players and emerging players. And we're not perfect. I think people know we're not perfect, but they see the way we're playing, sort of the identity of the team. People can relate to it. They can, you know, we want them to, the players to feel that affection and really bring joy into their play and really go and try and put in a strong performance tomorrow night.
And finally, everyone fit and well? There's no one you're worried about at this point?
Yeah, you know, Andrew Amabamadili has got a kick in the Achilles on Saturday, so he's been tentative, and we'll have to see how he is, and he's the main concern.
Will you be thinking about resting players with a view to Luxembourg or giving them an opportunity?
No. We're not doing that, really. You know, that's not to say there won't be changes, but it's not a resting situation. But I think we're picking a team that we think is best for this game, and hopefully we can perform to the level that we need to. Thank you.
Stephen Kenny chatting to our soccer correspondent Tony O'Donoghue, the squad training at the Aviva Stadium this evening, getting match ready, as is Tony himself, who joins us from the Aviva. Hiya, Tony. And with that, the technology dies. So he was there 10 seconds before we started, so we will do our very best to check in with Tony in a second. So as mentioned, coverage of that game on RT2 television tomorrow evening. It's live as well on an extended programme here on 2FM, and I think a lot of the narrative around it will be the fact that, let's be very honest, nobody is expecting the Republic of Ireland to get a result against Portugal tomorrow evening. We're going to revert to the old-style technology. Tony joins us on the phone. Hiya, Tony.
How are you doing? Are you all right?
The gremlins interceded. It's like the time honored tradition. You were there 5 seconds before I put up the fader. But anyway, we have you now, which is the main thing. I listened to an awful lot of Stephen Kenny's press conference alongside Jeff Hendrick earlier on. And there's a kind of a refreshing sense of realism that this isn't necessarily about let's go out tomorrow night and we're going to hammer Portugal. It's about the ongoing development of the squad. And it's impossible to underestimate the significance for the manager and a lot of the players of what it will mean to play in front of a sold-out Aviva Stadium tomorrow evening.
Oh, that's huge. And I mean, they've been making that point. I can't say the sense of expectation, the hunger for success is palpable at the moment. But I don't think this is the game that matters. I think the game that matters more is the game against Luxembourg, because having been beaten by them early in the campaign, that'll be a measure of how far this team has come, how far Stephen Kenny has, you know, managed to inculcate his ideas. He's certainly put his stamp on the team. When you look at the squad now, if there's so little relationship to what it did to previous regimes, and you know, it's a new broom in many respects, and now they are beginning to gel. So you know, tomorrow will be full of passion and emotion, a full house. Of course, a lot of people are here to see Ronaldo as well, but and a very decent Portuguese side. But I think Stephen and the squad know themselves that it's more likely that the Luxembourg game will give us a better indicator of how they've improved and where they are right now.
And the situation as well, Tony, we're currently fourth in the table. We went into it as third seed. So like a third place finish in the group, you're pretty much living up to what the coefficients would have expected of you, that it wouldn't be a disastrous campaign in, you know, to end it in that style.
Well, the problem is any campaign, you want to try and get out of it. And it's unlike Ireland, if you look back in our history, that with two games to go, we've got nothing to aim for. We were always there or thereabouts in terms of at least getting or punching towards a playoff place. So that is disappointing. We can't hide from that fact. And the defeat against Luxembourg is probably the lowest point. But there's a new group here now, and there's definitely a feel-good factor. But I temper that by saying, you know, beating Qatar and beating Azerbaijan does not a great squad make. But I'm just watching them here now in the training session. There is a great togetherness. You probably heard the news that Jason Malumbi is out, unfortunately. And also we have an issue with Andrew Omobamadele. He had a kick in his Achilles in Norwich's last game. So it's a kind of a wait-and-see situation for him. And it's such a pity because, you know, he took his chance against Portugal when Darragh O'Shea got injured and has become a very important player very quickly, the 19-year-old for Ireland. But it might be another young player to take his place. Nathan Collins could come in to that back three, which is the new preferred system. Or indeed, Seamus Coleman could play right-sided centre-back with Matt Doherty outside him. So there's definitely options and things to be considered by Stephen Kenny. And I think he'll have to consider as well, you know, one of the questions he was asked, you might have heard in the press conference, you know, the crowd will spur you on. There's no doubt about that. But you have to be so careful. Portugal are probably most dangerous when you're in their half, when you're in the final third, close to their goal.
And just very briefly to finish, Tony, it will be the Ronaldo show, and an awful lot of the people that have sold out this attendance are there to see Ronaldo and are there to see Bruno Fernandes, and we can't shy away from that. But a great
and
openness.
Diego Jota.
You could name a few more. There was a great openness at the press conference that this is far more than the Ronaldo show that we will bear witness to tomorrow. Nobody is shying away from the task at hand.
Yeah, but I mean, you would be naive, as Stephen Kenny said, if you were only worried about Ronaldo, because there's danger everywhere in the Portuguese ranks. There's no doubt about that. There's an awful lot of kids going to be here tomorrow as well, of course, to see Ronaldo. But it would be great to see them leaving the ground with a good Irish performance, hopefully a good Irish result as well, and thinking about Omobamadele if he plays, or Bazunu, or Cullen, or McGrath, because this new Ireland definitely has the potential to be something special.
Okay, Tony, appreciate your time. Tony O'Donoghue, our soccer correspondent with us there from the Aviva Stadium. Much more on that programme tomorrow, or that match on the programme tomorrow evening. Coverage here on 2FM, coverage as well on RTE2 television. You're listening to Game On here on 2FM. 6:15, break to take. We're chatting basketball in 2.5 minutes.
With Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game On! On 2FM.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. So we've talked about the Irish men's soccer team who are in action tomorrow. We're going to talk later about the women's rugby team who are in action on Friday. The men's rugby team are in action on Saturday. And sandwiched in between the whole lot and more than deserving of equal billing is the women's basketball side who begin their FIBA Euro Basket qualification campaign tomorrow. They face the Netherlands and Amsterdam. They'll then return to the National Basketball Arena on Sunday when they face the Czech Republic. And delighted to be joined by former Irish international Niamh Dwyer, who is with us to look ahead to it. Hi, Niamh, how are you?
Great, thanks a million for having me. It's great to be talking about basketball again. At this level again.
But isn't it great to have good reason to talk about it as well? Now, there's I don't know if you were listening to the tail end of the soccer chat there. We're talking about it's great to be playing Portugal, but you still want to be qualifying for tournaments. The significance of this weekend for Irish basketball, there will be ambitions, obviously, to qualify for Eurobasket 2023. But the real talking point is the fact that here we are in 2021. We finally have our elite national sides back competing at the level that they should have been competing at for years.
Yeah, it's brilliant. For all the soccer fans, it's the equivalent of the European qualifiers, Eurobasket. So we haven't been at this level since 2009. So it's been a long time coming for the basketball fans out there. So it's great to be back at the elite level again. And as you said, you have to be in it to win it, don't you? You have to be playing these teams. You have to be pushing yourself to improve. It's been a long break, but basketball has been continuing behind the scenes. We have a squad there of young players coming through who have been very successful at underage basketball with silver medals competing at underage European Championships, and you know, getting them the opportunity to play at this level and to develop further so that, like, you know, we can build on this campaign. You know, we're dipping our toe back into the water now. We're actually jumping straight into the deep end, actually, with it, to be honest. But it's great to give those girls a chance to start, you know, developing the game even further and pushing on with the experience and the likes of Grania there as well, and Adele Thornton and stuff. So we have a nice mix of players going in, and they deserve to be at this level, as you said, and deserve to be given the opportunity to play at the best in Europe.
And for the uninitiated, and without starting a civil war or going over basketball politics, we've effectively paid the price of cost-cutting in recent years, which has seen the senior national sides disappear from this level of competition, which, when you compare it, it would be like the FAI suddenly deciding, hang on, we're going to pull the men's soccer team out of the European qualifiers.
Yeah, so it all started back to 2009 is the last time, as I was saying, that we played at this level, and then the financial crash happened. And the struggles and, you know, of the governing body, you know, really, really took effect on the senior teams and all international teams, not just the senior teams. All underage was pulled at that stage, basically to get a grounding financially back into the sport. Over the years, the underage has gradually become, was gradually reintroduced. And as I was saying about the players who had the opportunity to be playing in European Championships over the last few years, and now they're old enough. They've had the experience of underage, and now finally the women's team are back in the European qualifiers. So it has been a long process to get back here. It's been a step-by-step process starting with the underage. So it's great to see it continuing. It's great to see, you know, the organisation back in these players, continue to develop and continuing to push the standards of Irish basketball.
And it's an unbelievable testament to the people that are involved in clubs up and down the country and schools as well up and down the country that conveyor belt of talent has remained despite the fact that the elite team, the kind of poster girls and poster boys of national basketball have been absent from the international scene. It's, you know, it says an awful lot about the basketball community up and down the country.
Yeah, anyone involved in basketball will understand the support network that is there for basketball. On and off the court, it's phenomenal. Like when we were playing in European 3v3, I remember the media organiser of the event coming up saying how much support and how much following on social media that Irish basketball gets. For a nation in Europe who wouldn't be known for their basketball, they're always surprised at the large amount of support we have. And that is reflective, like you said, in bringing these young players through to the stage now where they're actually, you know, ready to step back into the elite of European basketball. And, you know, the clubs have a lot to, you know, have to take a lot of credit. Grassroots have to take a lot of credit because, you know, to keep it going and keep it developing and basically having to reset and restart over the years, there's been a lot of good work done on the ground. And thank God it's starting to show at the top levels now as well.
Now, it's important to go into this with realistic expectations. I think we were amongst the seventh pot of seeds, you know, out of eight pots of seeds. We're in, you know, a very, very difficult group that this is about, it's almost like, you know, it's almost like a Debs ball. It's almost like a coming of age event as much as it is anything else. To be back, to be testing ourselves and to get a sense of where we are relative to the other nations around Europe.
That's exactly it. Look, this first window, there's three windows to make your listeners aware. The first window is this year, obviously, starting tomorrow and on Sunday when we play the Czech Republic in the basketball arena at home. But the next window is not until November 2022. So I think it's a little bit later. I think it's around the 24th of November. And then the final window is in February 2023. So it's a year and a half program, essentially. And, you know, we just agreed or got back into this level only 2 months ago. So at the end of the summer, after a very competitive small countries competition. So again, this is going to be a big step up even from the summer international program. We have to remember that, you know, basketball as an indoor sport here has had a year and a half out due to the pandemic here in Ireland. So this is another step up again for these girls. So I think they are very realistic. I think, as you were saying, this window will be used to kind of gauge where we are performance-wise against these teams and then come back and strategize and basically set more strategic goals after we get a sense of where we are when we play the Netherlands, Czech Republic in the next few days, and then start preparing for the next window, which we have a year to do.
But
we'll be looking to see progress, sorry.
Yeah, no, I was thinking, like reading about the format, I was thinking that's probably beneficial, or would that be a preferential for us to play it that way rather than, you know, a run of whatever number of games over the course of a couple of weeks and, you know, kind of treading water or running to stand still, that this gives us the ideal scenario to play these two games, come back, review it, see where everyone else is at, see where we're at, and you've effectively 11 or 12 months to develop your tactics and develop what it is needs to be worked upon for the second round of games. It's, to me, looking from the outside in, it looks a great opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we had to take the opportunity to wait another year and a half for the next round of qualifiers, or 2 years for the next round of qualifiers, I think would have been detrimental. So we had to take this opportunity. And as you said, the format will suit us because this is a great opportunity in this window to get back into it, to see where we're at. And then, like, you have all of summer months as well, you know, where you can bring in teams, maybe play a few international games. Fingers crossed, I'm not saying anything, you know what I mean, with COVID and things like that. But, like, you know, if James and his management team would be looking at that for definite, like, to kind of get a sense of the players he brings over. They have nine players that they trained over the summer playing in these games and kind of looking at what you need to do to get improved and compete against these teams. And as you said, you have 11 months there, you have a summer there as well, with hopes that you could get a few practice games in at a high level. Again, acclimatising the girls to this standard, because other than the Catherine Gordon Dwyer, none of them have played at this level. And that's what you'd be looking to do in this window and in your preparation coming up to the next window, is to get more and more experience at this level and acclimatise the level. And as you said, refine your tactics, maybe look at other players that might be available for the next window to fill in any of the gaps that you feel that you need going forward. So it does give us a great opportunity to develop at this level as well, the way the windows have been laid out.
You mentioned there the sister Grania is the elder stateswoman of the whole thing at 36, and you're looking at Hannah Thornton, 29, Anya O'Connor, 29, Michelle Clark, 27, and then you've got this like litany of 21 and 22 year olds. So the future is bright. I appreciate that, you know, basketball took you to the States and you really lived a great life as a result of the sport, but you must be so envious of them that they're back at this level and you know, women in their early 20s, what hopefully lies in store for them in the green singlet?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I just hope they appreciate what's in front of them. And I think they do. Like, you know, in 2009, when we beat the Netherlands, just to give a plug to the golden age, again, like in the basketball arena, if we had known that was going to be our last game at that level, I think, I don't know, it's a bit of nostalgic there about it. It's just a shame. With everything that happened, and definitely looking back, if I'd known back then what I know now, I definitely would have appreciated the opportunities more. And I hope these young women actually do. And I think, given the way they've played at underage level, they've fought, like you said, the older statesmen are there and they've done their time and they've continued to play at a high level, and that's why they're selected for this squad. But the younger players on the team have proven themselves at the European level and, you know, have actually contributed to getting this opportunity as well. And I really do think that these players do appreciate what's in front of them. I do think they realise that it's been such a big gap. They've all fought for it in their own way, either through the underage or the older players, continuing to fight at national level, national league level, and as you said, in club level, to keep the sport going and keep it thriving and keep it development. And they really do deserve the chance to test what they have out against these teams, and hopefully over the next year and a half, develop and become more competitive against, like I said, what's a really tough group.
The matches are live on TG Cahir now. Netherlands, is it 5:30 Dutch time or 5:30 Irish time tomorrow? Do you?
That's a good question.
Niamh, it's very simple. They play the Netherlands tomorrow afternoon, and they play the Czech Republic at 5:00 on Sunday. Both those matches are on TG Cahir, and I know there's tickets as well available for the Czech Republic game, or certainly there was when I checked earlier on. So, wish them well. Wish you well with the coverage on TG Cahir. And isn't it great to be back, being able to annoy legends like yourself to talk about elite basketball? So long may it last.
Yeah, absolutely. And like as I said, I'm sure everyone is behind the girls and the management team. And go on, your girls in green, right? I'm so excited to see us back at this level. And look, we know it's going to be a process, it's going to be development, but it's just great to have international basketball back in the arena and have fans back for it, because the men's small country were there over the summer with no fans. So I hope everyone gets out and supports the team on Sunday, lift the roof off the arena and show what it means to the Irish basketball community to be back at this level.
Niamh,
make sure you tune in.
Greatly appreciate your time. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks a million for having me.
Niamh Dwyer there, looking ahead to those Eurobasket 2023 qualifiers, and wish James Weldon and all the Irish squad well in the coming weeks. We have a lot more still to come on the programme. We are going to hear from within the Irish women's rugby camp in advance of their women's international against the USA, which takes place on Friday. It has been a week where I think boardroom matters have, let's be very honest, have completely eclipsed the fact that there's a match at the RDS this coming Friday evening. That's to come, but in advance of that, we are going to chat to the legendary Willie Anderson ahead of the Ireland All Blacks game at the Aviva Stadium on Saturday, and about his new book, Crossing the Line. Stay with us.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Fern's high protein cooked chicken breast fillet, available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on rugby.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. So it is all eyes on the Aviva Stadium for Saturday afternoon. Ireland playing host to New Zealand in the second of their games in the Autumn Nations series. And I think it's one of those ones that you can say, are you glass half full and say Ireland going to this having won two of the last four meetings of the countries? Or are you more pessimistic to say Ireland have won two, drawn one, and lost 29 of the last 32. But we will be very, very positive. We hope to see them build on that very impressive result against Japan last weekend. We are going to chat to the legendary Willie Anderson in just a moment about that game and his new book, Crossing the Line. But in advance of that, one very familiar face who will be back at the Aviva Stadium this weekend is the former Ireland forwards coach, John Plumtree, who's now working as an assistant coach with New Zealand's head coach, Ian Foster. John's been chatting to the media and has been talking about the dynamics and the psychology of the game. So do Ireland go in as underdogs, and will they be intimidated by New Zealand this weekend?
I'm not sure they'll fear us, mate. I think, you know, Ireland will believe that they can beat us, and that'll be based on, you know, how they played last week and their preparation this week. So we understand that as an All Black team, and that's what excites us as well. So yeah, I think those two guys know our players. Yeah, some of them have played a lot of rugby together, and from what I've read, they've, you know, went to similar schools and stuff. So yeah, there's some good knowledge, right? But you know, at the end of the day, they don't know how we play, what our plan is, how we train, how we prepare, how we're going to play against them. So yeah, they'll have a little bit of knowledge from what they've seen, and maybe a little bit of history on some individuals, but ultimately at the end of the day, our plan is our plan and they won't know it.
That's John Plumtree chatting in advance of that. As mentioned, delighted to be joined by Ireland and Ulster legend Willie Anderson is with us. Willie, how are you?
Good, Damien, how are you today?
Not too bad. Thanks so much for being with us. We were chatting in the office earlier on, and people talk about iconic moments between two countries, and you've Jacob Stockdale's try in 2018, you've got the tribute to Anthony Foley in Soldier Field in advance of that, and then people talk about Willie Anderson challenging the Haka at Lansdowne Road in 1989. I'm wondering, and I'm playing into the cliche completely, I'm wondering, in a week like this, there's hardly a conversation that goes by that someone doesn't want to get you to recount your mindset on that day.
Yeah, look, it was probably an iconic, you know, situation that happened back in '89, and it was all down to Jimmy Davison, who sort of prepared us for it and planned it for us, because he obviously said when they do the Haka, they'll do it again on at the weekend, and they'll do the Haka, and the crowds eventually they clap the Haka, and he said, look, let's change that psychology around, let them clap our dance, which was, you know, facing the Haka and getting right into their faces, and we threw down the gauntlet that particular day.
And it's a moment that has stayed with you throughout your life, and I'd imagine there's not one regret, because I think the week before that, had they played in Wales and, you know, the team had stood behind the posts and basically the All Blacks had the run of the pitch to make them look like they were intimidated. But for you, it was all about standing up, lads. We're going to stand up man to man and do our very best to get what would have been that historic first win.
Yeah, and that's, you know, as I say, Jimmy Davis prepared us for us. He talked to the team about it. Now, maybe we didn't get all consensus. However, you know, the guys that he talked to about it, myself and certainly Davey Irwin and Jimmy McCoy and the guys that got there, certainly we went forward and you know, certainly were nearly rubbing noses with Buck Sharford. And I talked to the guys immediately after the game, the New Zealanders in their changing room, and they said, fantastic, you know, it was a fantastic challenge to us. And, you know, it pumped us up. The crowd were absolutely mental. And, there's not a week or a month goes past that I don't meet someone who says, Chivers, I was at that game. It was unbelievable. And just the atmosphere, it was certainly the greatest atmosphere that I have ever, you know, played under.
It's one of those moments that the Aviva will fall silent on Saturday, and people love to be able to say, oh, I was there when this happened, or there when that happened, and there to witness the haka. But when the dust settles on it, is it an unfair advantage, or does it just feed into this aura that has been built up around New Zealand? Or when you're a player and you're standing there with 14 fellas alongside you facing it, is it largely an irrelevance because you're so in the zone ahead of what business is about to play out over 80 minutes?
I think what you said there is quite true. Is you're in the zone, and really, you know, the haka should motivate you. Like, I mean, I've stood with a lot of players in the old Cardiff Arms Park, and you know, the hairs would be standing on your back when they would sing their national anthem. It was hits, absolutely iconic as well, and that motivated motivated the team to be inspired. And I think, you know, the haka should inspire the Irish players this weekend as much as the New Zealanders, and that's what they should take out of it. As you say, they should be in the zone to play them, and that's the way it should be.
And the dynamic has changed, and I know year on year players were reminded about it's 110 years, 109 years, 108 years, and Ireland had never managed to get that result. But you look at it this weekend, there's an awful lot of players who have been involved in two wins in 4 years. So will there be a significantly different mindset within the Irish camp about facing New Zealand compared to what was previously the case over so many decades?
Oh, no, there's no doubt about it. I mean, Ireland have to play at the top of their game, and New Zealand, Even though they've been playing outstandingly well, and they're the form side in the world at the moment, and you know they can score, at the drop of a pin. So Ireland will be very aware of that. Their kicking game and their turnover game, they have to be very aware of that. However, there's a lot of players in that sort of Irish camp that have had victory over the All Blacks, and that's fantastic. So. But it'll be a great game to see where Ireland are in the world status at the moment.
And before we chat about the book and what the last couple of weeks must have been like for you, it is crucial for Ireland. This is the first of four games they will play against the All Blacks in less than a year. That if they're to realistically have ambitions of going to the World Cup as contenders or being spoken about as contenders, they need to get certainly one win, two wins, somewhere along the way over this run of four games against New Zealand.
Yeah, absolutely, because they are the measure, and they play an unbelievably high-tempo, offloading type of game, and they can mix it. They can mix it. You know, they can take it on the forwards, they can take it in the backs, and Ireland have to match themselves in that. And as I say, it'll be a tremendous sort of measure for this group of players from Ireland to see where they're at in world status, and I think it'll be a fantastic game on Saturday.
You're a busy man of late, obviously, the book Crossing the Line in shops in recent weeks, and I have no doubt it's going to be very prominent at the end of the year when discussions are taking place around sports books of the year and awards are being given out and everything else. You've really, you know, kind of bared your soul, and it's a very challenging read in patches. It's a very entertaining read overall as well. But how have you found the last couple of weeks? Was this something that, you know, the challenge of opening yourself up so much when I think you'd lived an awful lot of your life as a man who kept your cards somewhat close to your chest?
Well, whenever Brendan Fanning actually asked me to write the book, I had a lot of thinking to do with particularly my family and all. But I agreed to do it on the basis that it wasn't going to be a sycophantic book. It wasn't going to be like fantastic, world, great player or whatever, because I wasn't. However, I wanted to be an honest book and a book about life, because it's not just about rugby. It's about life, and people like me have gone through tragedy and ups and downs in their life. and have had to overcome certain situations. And that's what I wanted to be around. And basically, you know, for my grandchildren, really, to pick it up and say, well, look, he may have been a bit of a maverick, but however, you know, he achieved his goal, or he stuck at it, or he got up when he was down. And as well as that, you know, kind of lessons for life as well. So it's much more than just a rugby book.
Yeah, no, 100%. I'd echo that completely. And I'm wondering, you had to wait till relatively late in your career to get the breakthrough at Ireland, and then you were effectively an ever-present from, you know, pretty much 84 to 1990 when you played your last game. And I'm wondering, was there an extra motivation for you? Because it's clear in the book that while people will say you unfairly play down your own ability, that you're a better player and a better leader than you might make yourself out to be. But did you appreciate it more because perhaps you had to work that little bit harder to get it than some of your peers of the time?
Well, there's some guys get caps now for 2 minutes and they've got a cap. But, I mean, in those days, you know, you got a cap and when you got it. And I suppose because of Argentina and the sort of shenanigans and on there, you know, that held me back. And in ways, you know, that was even greater motivation to achieve, you know, what I thought was. And also the fact that at the time we were playing for a magnificent Ulster side who had a run of form for about 9 years. And that really helped, you know, the jump into the side. And I just was so honoured and so privileged to have achieved the goal. And then, as I said to quite a few guys, when you get that one cap, you want 50. You know, I didn't get 50, but you want as many as you can after that, and you'll do whatever you can to do it and stick there. And I was so honoured and so proud to be able to pull on the jersey and certainly play my first game at Lansdowne Road.
Just, you mentioned Argentina, and for people that aren't completely familiar with the story, you go there in 1980, so we're in advance of the Falklands War. Your eye gets caught by a flag that, you know, perhaps might have made a nice souvenir or a nice photo opportunity. And give us the brief story. It resulted in quite an extended stay in Argentina.
Yeah, well, I mean, the flag there should be up at dawn and down at dusk, but this one wasn't. It was, you know, sort of at 11 o'clock at night, and I said, okay, with another fella, maybe I'll take that one home. And literally, we took the flag down off the pole and walked home casually. It wasn't like we were running, you know, because it wasn't like that. And then the next day, or that night, six or seven guys with machine guns came through the door in our room and hotel, and knew it was fairly serious. And when the consulate came to me the next morning, the UK, British consulate, and they said, look, a few generals want you executed here. So I wrote letters at that stage, which I don't particularly want to read again. But it took me about 4 months to get from that, and until they realised it was a prank. But it was a very serious matter, and certainly I could realise why they were so adamant about the Falkland Islands, or Malvinas Islands, as they call them. Mm.
Do you look back with universal pride in all that you achieved, though? You know, to have won the Five Nations back in 1985, I know there's obviously, I think that entire group of players, there's a little bit of an angst that you couldn't do the job against England to secure what would have been a first Grand Slam since 49. But you mentioned it, like, that was a phenomenal Irish team that perhaps if there was to be one failing, maybe it wasn't refreshed enough in time for that inaugural World Cup. But, like, you must have so many fond memories and so many proud memories of what you achieved in the Green of Ireland and the White of Ulster.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, I rugby has given me so much in my life. Passport to so many countries in the world, rugby countries, friends, you know, great highlights. And that was a particularly fantastic highlight. And Mick Doyle did a great job the first year in terms of, you know, we were lucky in a few games, but we got there, and just for maybe a penalty against France, we would have won the Grand Slam. However, you know, it was great to have gone to the first World Cup and to be a part of that. I don't think we were prepared as we could have been. But I think, you know, looking back at the Ulster side that I played for that whole sort of 80s, it was just phenomenal because we played sides, we beat sides from all over the world, and I think we probably, if there was a European Cup at that stage, we'd have had a good shot at it. Mm. But I've had some great memories, fantastic memories. Great lads.
Yeah, and the friendships, and that really comes across in the book as well, that there's not many of us can say, you know, you became pals with Serge Blanco and went off on holidays in his, you know, to his place and whatever else. But there will be people, I know one element that you would have loved to have had that Ulster head coach job, irrespective of all the other, you know, the time he spent as a consultant with Ireland and work at Leinster and Scotland and everything else. But your most recent tenure with Ulster as the academy, how much pride does it give you to have generated such a rich generation of Ulster players now who have done, you know, who are so close to bringing silverware back to the province and are such a key part of Irish teams going forward?
Yeah, there's a great vein of players who, you know, I was very fortunate to be involved with the academy over the last 5 years there, 6 years, and I think that it was great to have actually put a wee bit into it, not just about the technique or the tactical aspects of the game, but about the culture and the values of Ulster rugby and rugby in general. Because, you know, I came in on the back of maybe not a very particularly happy experience that Ulster was going through, but it was great to have had an opportunity to have laid down, you know, what I believed was what was the values of an Ulster player that were very prominent whenever I was playing for Ulster back in the 80s.
And that's still a big part of it now, that those of us who are lucky to work up at the Kingspan Stadium, we see, you know, the effectively the Hall of Fame along the tunnel and the reminder to players of those who have gone before and those who have gone on to do great things for Ireland and the Lions and everything else. And I'm wondering, there's such an appetite for success up there, that how much potential is there within Ulster at the moment if they can just get over the line and get that monkey off their back?
Yeah, I think there is, and I think there's, you know, there's a lot of young players, and it's going to take them maybe a year or two to gel together and become that force. You know, Leinster have got to jump on them and jump on everybody, really. However, I think there's a vein of players there with maybe a few, you know, strong additions, can get them maybe at something that they deserve in the next year or two. It may not happen this year, but I think over the next couple of years there's a great desire within that group of players, certainly, who have great leadership qualities as well, never mind just playing qualities.
Before I let you go, what are your thoughts then in terms of the potential outcome at the weekend? And I don't think anyone is shying away from the fact that New Zealand come to Dublin in phenomenal form, but do you fancy Ireland to make a dent or potentially get that win on Saturday afternoon?
I think it'll be a very difficult situation for Ireland Saturday. You know, they really have to perform and they need to be within touching distance in the last 10 minutes, even the last 5 minutes. If they are, they've got an opportunity. If they're not, you know, All Blacks could run away with it.
Willie, wish you continued success. Good luck with the rest of the book publicity and everything else that comes with putting your heart out there. Crossing the Line, the autobiography of Willie Anderson, which is published by Reach. Willie, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Damien. Brilliant, all together.
That's Willie Anderson joining us there in advance of that. And as mentioned, if you've got a rugby fan in your life who's of a certain vintage, they will love that. Actually, rugby fans of any age will love it, but particularly if you're a fan of Ulster and Ireland from back in the day, Willie Anderson's book, certainly one to keep an eye out on. It's a great year for a sports book, and that certainly is up there amongst the best of them. An awful lot still to come on the programme. We are going to switch attention from the men's game against New Zealand to look ahead to the Irish women's game against the USA in a week that continues, let's be very honest, to be distracted by off-field matters.
With Green Farms on-the-go chicken bites, 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected Tesco's nationwide.
Game on. Check out the podcast
on the RTÉ Radio Player app.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. We're into the final 5 minutes. Tara Kumar is on the way after 7 o'clock. We're going to finish with rugby, where Anna Capeless today has earned a very deserved recall to the Ireland team for Friday's Women's November International against the USA, which is live at the RDS, coverage on the RTE Player. Lauren Delaney named at fullback, Laura Sheehan and Bavin Parsons in the back three. Emer Considine moves to centre alongside Sena Naupu. Stacey Flood and Elsa Hughes together at halfback. Lindsay Peake, Cliona Maloney, Leah Lyons in the front row, Nicola Friday and Sam Monaghan in the second row. The Irish side will be captained by Ciara Griffin in the back row, where she's joined by Edel McMahon and Capeless, who will play at number 8. It has been an eventful week, to say the least, for women's rugby in Ireland. Delighted to be joined to chat about that and much more by Ali Donnelly from scrumqueens.com. Ali, how are you?
Yeah, good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us. We'll chat about the fallout from Anthony Eddy's interview and everything else over the course of it. But I feel so sorry for the players in a week like this, that there's so much disappointment for not having qualified for the World Cup, and now you've got a really significant challenge rolling into town this weekend. That it is, it's not the easiest of test match weeks, one would imagine, for the squad in camp.
No, definitely. I think there have been some distractions this week, and also, you know, the players will find out a bit about where they're at mentally, I think, this week when they play America. I mean, they should nonetheless be confident. They are at home. The US have just come off the back of 2 games in 5 days against Canada, both of which they lost. And two of their better players, Aylif Kelter and Ilona Maher, have not travelled. They've gone back to the US Sevens residency programme. So, you know, a win would be really confidence-boosting for Ireland, and it's absolutely possible. So they should go into it with some confidence, even if the setting around it's been difficult.
Yeah, you covered the World Game with scrumqueens.com, and you know, for people that aren't familiar with the website, it has effectively become the go-to place to talk about women's rugby or to read about women's rugby. From the correspondence you'd get or the conversations you would have with people, how damaging a week or how damaging a couple of weeks has it been for the perception of Irish women's rugby?
Yeah, I think people are just very disappointed, actually, because the Irish programme was seen as a kind of standard bearer back in 2014, 13 to 15, say, when they were winning things and getting to World Cup semi-finals. And I think what we've seen this week is disharmony within the present group and those who lead it. And I think a lot of us found it quite uncomfortable, actually, to see someone in a position of leadership almost kind of pointing fingers downwards at an amateur group mostly, who, you know, have much less of a voice. So I think it is damaging and it's disappointing. And there's going to have to be some serious kind of conversations happening behind the scenes in Ireland to change things, because, you know, I think what you saw, I guess, is, you know, there's somebody in position there who's overseeing a programme, you know, demise, unfortunately, and that's what's happened. Not taking, you know, responsibility for that. So I think that was disappointing. And, you know, people will Ireland on. They want Ireland to do well. They've been a team who've done well in the past. So I think disappointment probably the most, you know, the emotion I'm sort of hearing the most from people.
Yeah, and is it as simple as looking at structures and the tinkering of structures? Like, how significant a change could minor alterations make in terms of the relationship between the AIL and the international side? And, you know, the very fact as well, so many people are looking at the World Cup qualifiers and wondering why players were in camp in Abbottstown when they could have been playing competitive games in the build-up. Just little minor things which all add up.
Yeah, like, I actually think there needs to be some significant change. It'll be interesting to see what comes out of this ongoing review, because if you look at the RFU targets from 2017 to 23 for the women's game, all but one has been failed. And that, you know, that is suggesting that there's some major structural problems. But I think before you can even talk about that, there's got to be a reset between the players who are feeling like Cliona Maloney, who's, you know, who's come out and been open about how she feels, and those in charge. And there's clearly been some kind of massive breakdown of communication between the manager and the players. So you're not going to succeed if that's the culture in which the team are playing. So that, first of all, has to be dealt with. And then secondly, I think, you know, we'll see what happens with this independent review. We've been here before, unfortunately. This is a cyclical, it seems, issue with the RFU and the women's programme. Every few years, something emerges. There's an apology. I think we've had 2 public apologies this year from the RFU already about the women's game. A review happens, which we never see. And, you know, a few years later, it comes on again. So I think we do need to see some significant changes. And what I would really like to see is, you know, there's a board, the RFU, have been the kind of stable group throughout all of these challenges. 25 people on that board, 22 are men. We're not here to talk about governance, but that's interesting in itself. You know, we rarely see evidence of those members standing up to say, look, this is not okay and it keeps happening. So if I was a member of a board and there were significant issues at one of the programs I was overseeing and these were repeated, you know, you'd be taking responsibility. You'd be demanding answers. So I think we do, you know, we shouldn't overlook this week as a storm in a teacup. Mm. It feels to me much more than that.
I'm just about to be over on time. So one final question, if you can. Just like, obviously, Amy Lee Murphy-Crowe and Nicola Friday today were out for media, effectively distanced themselves from Cliona Maloney's comments earlier in the week, saying that they're her personal opinions, that they may not necessarily agree with them. But there will be an argument made that you can prioritise the sevens because it's a smaller pool of players. It's more financially viable rather than trying to finance the 15s game. But very briefly, where is our structure compared to the structures that we're seeing in other Six Nations nations or leading nations in the world?
Well, honestly, I think it's hard to answer that because it's not very clear what the union are prioritising. So they are saying in the interview with Anthony Eddie this week suggested, you know, there was no one priority over another, whereas here in England, where I'm based, the RFU are very clear, our priority is 15s. And some people don't like that, but at least it's clear and transparent. Okay. So I think it's difficult to answer that question, actually, until it's a little more honest, I think, from those running the game here.
Ali, we could give this an hour, but unfortunately we don't have the time. Thanks so much for being with us. Ali Donnelly from scrumqueens.com. Apologies to Tara. We'll chat to you tomorrow at 6.